Palestine exception. What Barnard College has been doing is actually writing new policy as a way to then retroactively decide that events are unauthorized or in fact do not follow procedure. And I think there's some really critical issues here. And one of the critical issues is how are decisions at the university made? A lot of these have been made unilaterally without consultation by faculty or students, and is in fact a violation of the university's own conduct guidelines. And clearly there's a tremendous amount of influence by trustees, administrators, alumni, and donors who are making decisions about what kinds of speech ought to take place on college campuses and what can and cannot be posted.
We're talking to Barnard College professor Pramila Nadesan. We want to thank you so much for being with us. We're going to do part two at democracynow.org. Felt it was critical to get in that Gaza journalist. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help! KBOO Community Radio is listener supported. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during our annual end-of-year campaign, your support can go even farther. Contribute today at kboo.fm/give, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $20,000, thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals, such as possums and rabbits, including their needs and ways to help them. Be sure to tune in to That Vegan Show on the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m., right here on KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Remember, Pennsylvania, it's 1914, the miners strike for higher pay, scabs brought in to break the strike. Miners' wives bar their way. Now here comes the local sheriff and the company police, and the women are all jailed for disturbing the peace. Mother Jones, fiery agitator, tells the women sing, sing all day, sing all night, and don't stop for anything. So the women sing their hearts out on and on defiantly, till the sheriff's going crazy and he sets the women free. It's the power of song,
of their voices,
it's the power of song,
song.
Turn despair into defiance and defiance into song. Give them hope and give them heart. Hold the line and hold the fort. Solidarity forever when our voices weave together into song. Remember a township called Soweto. It's 1976, rebellion's ready to explode. And the children of Africa are traveling freedom's road. And they sing as they protest against apartheid's hated laws. And they sing as they remember those who died in freedom's cause. For the parents it was Sharpeville, now their daughters and their sons are the ones to break the clocks and the tear gas and the guns. And the sound of their singing shakes apartheid's prison walls, and apartheid soon will crumble, and its citadels will fall.
Indeed, the power of song. Give them hope. This is KBOO Community Radio. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your host, Paul Rowland. I'll be with you for the hour. That was the great Leon Rosselson from The World Turned Upside Down, Rossel Songs, 1960-2010. Came out in 1991. Oh, that's not right. Anyway, something's off there. I think, that was Leon Rosselson. And that is the theme of today's show. Choral singing together, the power of song. And momentarily we'll bring up Annie Levin from New York City. Before that, I want to talk to you about the power of community radio and the few days we have left in our end of year membership drive campaign. And we still got a ways to go to reach our $75,000 goal. So we're hoping you can take advantage of our one-to-one matching grant to double the power of your contribution to our station. And you can do that by going to kboo.fm, click on the donate button if you got the wherewithal, and or you can text KBOO to 44321, KBOO to 44321, or you can mail it in to KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Do it soon before the end of the year when we end. So, thank you so much for that. And now, Annie Levin is a New York City-based reporter, cultural critic, and UAW labor organizer. Her writing has appeared in Observer, Jacobin, and Current Affairs, among other publications. And she writes on labor, the arts, politics, and everything in between, and was co-founder of the Sing in Solidarity Choir. And she'll tell us all about that. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm pretty well. And yourself?
I'm doing great.
How's the weather back there on the East Coast?
Oh, it's okay. It's it's a balmy 46 degrees. It's a pretty warm winter so far.
Yeah, well, that's the way things are going, isn't it? Anyway, we won't get into that right now. But just a quick introduction why I reached out to you. I saw your article, Radicals Go Caroling, the Untold Story of Progressive Choirs. But, you know, interestingly, just a couple weeks before that, I had started thinking about the old Portland Radical Choir, which was around for a few years, started, I think, in the wake of Occupy. And then there's a whole, stop evictions movement was also kind of in the wave of Occupy. And they went around and sang at actions and events. And it was really inspiring to have them. And they passed out, song sheets so everybody could sing along. And, they, like so many such groups that you probably know about, they were fairly brief-lived. And I've since learned about some others. Of course, there is the Portland Peace Choir, which is ongoing, and the Gay Chorus, which is ongoing, and maybe others that I don't know about. And there is also another one I will talk about later. But that's why I was struck by coming across somebody reposting your article, which appeared 2 years ago on December 22, 2021. So with that, here we are. Tell us how you got started in, singing with other people and what led you to start this chorus.
Right. Well, I had always done a fair amount of singing as a young person, as a student. I was in very conventional high school choirs, sang the Hallelujah Chorus. I had been far away from any kind of music for many years until I became a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, the New York City chapter, and someone who's a good friend of mine now, someone named Dana Steer, he started, who is a formerly a chorus boy, was in off-Broadway shows, national tours. He wanted to start a labor chorus in our DSA chapter, and he got a bunch of people together and tried to figure out if we could do this. And we got some conductors, we got some people who could play a piano, a lot of people interested in singing, and we got that going in winter of 2017 and 2018.
Mm-hmm. And so was it, you do talk about, the difficulty a lot of us have. I actually mentioned to you in my email of introduction that I had actually, Anne Weiss, a local folk singer, songwriter, and a choir conductor, has a Everybody Sing community choir that I went to. It's a class so people can go and learn how to sing and sing with other people. And I kind of validated that I actually have a decent singing voice, and so I was really thrilled. But anyway, you mentioned in your piece that people like myself feeling a little shy or not unsure of their voice, and so how was that with the people in the DSA chapter, getting them involved?
Right. Well, I think, you know, when you have a choir in like a educational institution or a church, it's generally people will go because they already have a good singing voice. They already know how to sing. They are good at it. They like to hear themselves sing, and they're, you know, relatively confident. And I think the DSA choir has a lot of people who are interested in socialism and in political movements on the left, and who are not necessarily coming from a musical background. There's certainly many people in the choir were. Lots of people who had never sung at all or hadn't sung since childhood. And I think the choir really brings people together and in some instances builds people's confidence. And I think in general what we've learned is that almost everybody can sing. And even if you've been called tone deaf, you know, or that's also, it's a kind of an umbrella term, and it can mean a lot of different things, and a lot of people can work on that and can kind of by listening to people and by listening to themselves, and can kind of sing in a choir. And our choir has no auditions, so really people can just show up whenever and join in and sing. And we've been very lucky to have like many wonderful, wonderful professional musicians who have come, who are DSA members, who believe in the project, and who have come and taught us songs and accompanied us.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of, I want to get also, you know, you touch on a lot of the broader kind of importance and different examples of political singing in political movements, singing together groups that spontaneous or not, that really empower those movements, those rallies, those protests, whatever they might be. But so what kind of events, rallies, whatever, have you played at in general and more recently maybe, and coming up even?
Sure. I think the most recent one, 2 weeks ago, UAW picket line, the Mount Sinai postdoctoral workers are out on strike, and we went out to their picket line, and it was outside of a hospital, so they weren't allowed to use amplification, and we taught them a couple of old protest songs so that they could sing with each other, even if they didn't have megaphones and couldn't really hear chants.
Mm-hmm. Just a recommendation. Some people hold the phone really close to their face and maybe press some of the buttons. I don't know if that's what just happened, but we lost a little bit of what you said. Just pay attention to that.
Okay.
Happens all the time as a talk show host. There's all kinds of interesting things that can go on. Anyway, so let's just talk about, you know, right now, and we'll talk about it more later. You've got a new album coming out, your group. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So Starvation Army, band music number one, is a album of songs from the industrial workers of the world from the early 20th century. And we were very lucky to be connected with a conductor and music professor from Denison University, Chris Westover Munoz, who reached out to us because he wanted to have an actual protest choir on his on an album of these songs, many of which had never been recorded before, and certainly none of which had ever been recorded with a full brass orchestra, which was meant to capture the sound of the IWW from the early 20th century. And this was recorded last fall, and it's our first album, and we had been singing many of these songs since the choir started 5 years ago, but now I think we kind of elevated a lot of those songs through Chris, the conductor, and made a sound that I think has not been heard for, you know, over a century.
Yeah, that's wonderful, especially since Utah Phillips left us, who kept those songs alive for so many of us. It's nice to see that. I'm looking forward to that album, and hoping to get a copy here for KBOO so people can play that. So we'll listen to a cut from that a little further on, maybe after we take some calls and go a little deeper into this. So I want to just read a paragraph to launch the next thing I want to talk about. The power of this is from your article again, Radicals Go Caroling, the untold story of progressive choirs from Yes Magazine of a couple years ago. And I am speaking with Annie Levin from New York City, who is co-founder of the Singin' Solidarity Choir and was nice enough to join us on the phone today on my show. So you say, the power of song to literally transform the brain and move people to action has given it a place of privilege in mass political actions. Almost every revolutionary movement in modern history, the labor movement, the civil rights movement, the anti-apartheid movement, and so many more, has had an accompanying singing culture. That's because singing at protests isn't just for pleasure, it works. So you can both give us maybe an example of how it's worked in your time in life, and also some examples, prominent examples from, you know, our own history and maybe around the world.
Sure. Well, springs immediately to mind is an action that Singin' Solidarity did in very early, was it 2019, I think, and we in New York City in the East Village, there is a Planned Parenthood, and there is a right-wing Catholic church that is a couple blocks away, and a lot of early Sunday mornings, the right-wing Catholic church will have a procession of monks and parishioners who go and sing Ave Marias outside of the Planned Parenthood to try to, like, scare away people from trying to get abortions. And we were asked to come and sing kind of against them, because these were like pro-life activists, and we were asked to come and sing against them and sing feminist songs, to sing left-wing songs, to be sort of encouraging to people going in and out of the clinic and try to help them to feel safe. And so that was an example of singing as counter-protest. And it worked especially well in that instance because it was singers singing against other singers.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we have the civil rights movement. We have a lot of, certainly there is, you can't discount from this scenario the singer-songwriters that came out that wrote, anti-war songs and lots of stuff. And, of course, Pete Seeger was a great one because he always did encourage people to sing along. And a lot of those other singer-songwriters did. Maybe Bob Dylan early on, not so much later. But that's another story. So, yeah, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement. Talk about some of the research maybe you did to find out about that.
Sure. Well, I did some research into the way song work in the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, and I think that's probably, I think between that and the like Chilean Latin American Nueva Canción tradition, I think one of the strongest instances of song being put into practice in political movement. And in South Africa, there was a dance called the Toyi Toyi, I think I pronounced that correctly. It's a powerful dance, like bouncing from foot to foot, that was accompanied by choral singing, sometimes with multiple harmonies in the streets while facing off against armed police. And this was meant to be a very powerful and frightening sound and movement to scare the police, to make the crowd feel very strong and powerful. And as I also talk about in the article, like we have now scientific evidence that shows you that when you are singing, you it's a palliative. It makes you feel less pain. It makes you feel less tired. It makes you feel more in solidarity with the people around you, in connection with them. And so this has become a very, very powerful tool in community building and in political movement, because the physical as well as spiritual impact it has on our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to invite people to call in 503-231-8187. Give us a few minutes. I want to go to your a cut from that album in a second here. But, you know, I want to invite people to, you know, what experience have you had singing together with other people, especially in public, especially as part of political actions, campaigns, whatever? Were you part of the Portland Radical Choir? Are you part of other choirs that are happening right now? Maybe ones that I don't even know about and I should have invited you on the show, done my research. Would like to hear all that. So 503-231-8187, maybe introduce the song that you sent me that we're about to hear, Annie Levin.
Yeah, sure. So the song is an old wobbly song, Dump the Bosses Off Your Back, by, I think the name of the lyricist is John Brill. And speaks for itself. You how and why you want to dump the bosses off your back. Don't be a stooge. Don't be dumb. Don't make nice with your boss. What you actually want to do is fight the power, fight your boss, and build solidarity in connection with your fellow workers. And this is with Sing in Solidarity and the Brass Band of Columbus, Ohio.
All right. Well, let's just go to that right now. That's okay. It ended abruptly. I don't know what happened there, but that's fine. We got a good taste of that song from your upcoming album, again, which is called Salvation Army Band Music Number One.
Starvation Army.
Starvation Army. Yes, I know exactly. That's the takeoff of Salvation Army, which has their own singers around and their jangling bells. Starvation Army Band Music Number One, music to fan the flames of discontent, along with Chris Westover, Munez, Harris, IPOC, and the Brass Band of Columbus and Friends. Sounded like a rich, full group there. So again, people can call in at 503-231-8187 and join this conversation. Annie Levin, my guest, does have a website, annielevin.com, where you can find out all about this, what she's done. And she's got that article in Yes Magazine, Radicals Go Caroling, The Untold Story of Progressive Choirs. I also linked to several other really interesting articles. Mega Mechanism for Bonding, Why Singing Together Does Us Good. Also, Radical... doesn't have the title there, but there's a group in Leeds started by a former member of Chumbawamba called the Commoners Choir, and that's someone who joined that, and why it transformed how and why it transformed their life. And you are listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and we are in the final days of our end-of-year campaign, asking you to support the power of community radio to unite and inspire people, and having guests on like Annie Levin, so you can contribute to this ongoing experiment in local community communication and community building by going to our website at kboo.fm and click on donate, or you can text KBOO to 44321. So Annie, you must have some experience with community radio. Got any good words to say about stations like KBOO and all the other sometimes struggling but often thriving stations around the country?
Yeah, right. Well, I am a very big fan of public radio, and I think especially nowadays when the public radio stations, public television, are so badly defunded by right-wing governments, we absolutely need our public radio. We need our local news, and we need to hear the voices of the people on the airwaves more than ever.
So, and of course, I just a caveat there. We are community radio. We take perhaps undue pride in distinguishing ourselves from like NPR, public radio writ large, which is government funded. We have some government funding, but 80% of our money actually does come from our listeners, our members, supporters. And as we often say, less than 10% of people who do listen to KBOO are actually contributing members, which is fine. We love to have people listen. But if we could inch that up a few percentage points, it would help us a lot. So consider contributing to us. So again, I ask those questions, you know, what are your experiences, you listening to singing together, to being part of actions or rallies or whatever, where people sing together with a message to strengthen the event, the people together to move things forward? What kind of experiences have you had? Do you think we need another edition of the Portland Radical Choir? Are you a member of a choir that does that kind of thing right now? Well, I'd love to hear from you. 503-231-8187 is the number. So back to your article, Radicals Go Caroling. And let's talk a little more about industrial workers of the world. That was I don't actually know that much about how they did the singing. I know, you know, there's a lot of songs came out. Obviously, Joe Hill is one of the famed ones, and there's quite a few others. There's their Little Red Songbook, which is still in print, I believe. Tell us a little bit about the singing in the industrial workers of the world.
Well, sure. So I think the IWW is known as a singing union, I believe, right from the beginning. And they had, I think, first they would hand out song sheets just like we do, and then eventually there were so many songs they decided to publish a book, and they published a book, and this is how they made a little bit of money of all their songs. And they there were many, many songwriters, like all of them, you know, self-taught workers, steel workers, people who worked in lumber mills, who also wrote songs. And if you look at the language of some of these lyrics, some of it is really quite sophisticated, I think, particularly to the modern ear. If you look at the words to, say, a song like Solidarity Forever, and what the story that I've initially heard as a member of Sing in Solidarity, and that I later researched for a recent article of mine in Jacobin about the Starvation Army, our IWW album, was that the Salvation Army would be sent by the bosses of the lumber mills to Skid Row in places like Spokane, Washington, to drown out the voices of the Wobblies. So the Wobblies would be singing about class consciousness, and worker solidarity and the Salvation Army would try to drown them out with their brass band. And so the IWW, they would they created lyrics to songs, to hymns, and that the Salvation Army would have been playing, so that the Salvation Army would be playing the same melody, but the words were words of class consciousness, worker struggle, solidarity, and so on. That the Wobblies would sing with the Salvation Army, and so they weren't drowned out. Their meetings weren't interrupted. There's a couple of sources for this, and it's a story that, when I actually went and researched it, was written by Wobblies, you know, several decades after the fact. And so a lot of it is sort of half clouded in kind of mythology. But I think certainly the Salvation Army played on in Skid Row, trying to get converters from the workers, from the destitute, and the IWW shared that same space. And in Spokane, Washington, I cannot remember the year exactly, but they there was a free speech protest led by the Wobblies, where the Wobblies they were prevented by a city ordinance from gathering and meeting and giving speeches in the street. And it was the ordinance said, like, nobody can do that. You can't give speeches in the street. But an exception was made for religious institutions. So the Salvation Army could preach, but the IWW was not allowed to give speeches. And so they did what's called an arrest action, where they brought hundreds and hundreds of people to Skid Row in Spokane, and one after another got up on top of a soapbox and started talking, and they would immediately get arrested. And eventually there were so many people crowding the jails of Spokane for protesting the free speech law that the jails were overloaded, and the city coffers could no longer afford to keep so many Wobblies in jail. And of course this was a process that took years, and it was very dangerous. People died, there was a fair amount of violence. But eventually, like, they actually won the free speech. They won free speech again in Spokane. The ordinance was rescinded.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that obviously the Solidarity Forever was based upon the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and I could see the Salvation Army brass band doing that song. So it was transformed into the anthem of the American labor movement. The verse, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord," turned into, "When the Union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run." Anyway, yeah, so, and that's a tradition, of course. You know, it's an old tradition of taking old folk melodies and turning new lyrics. And that was, of course, a mainstay of our own folk revival, starting, well, way back with Woody Guthrie going into the 50s and 60s. And of course, then you talk about radical caroling comes from the tradition of counter-protest. You already mentioned that, and you make up some of your own parodies. What are some of the parodies that you've made up?
We had somebody in the choir when we did some caroling a couple of years ago. Instead of "I Had a Little Dreidel," to the tune of "I Had a Little Dreidel," we sang a song about canceling rent. Instead of "dreidel, dreidel, dreidel," it was "cancel, cancel, cancel."
Which is not exactly a parody. It's just taking
a
tune.
No, it wasn't a parody. Yeah. I mean, I would actually distinguish between the two traditions. And one, the IWW tradition, where they actually do parody the old Salvation Army songs. And then there's just you're taking the original melody and changing the words around.
So, again, I do invite people to call in. I'd really, really love to hear people's own experiences. I'd really like to have a radical choir here in Portland, similar to the Singing Solidarity. I don't know if DSA here has ever talked about doing that. If anyone's listening, it'd be interesting to hear that. If anyone is interested in helping start one, please call in. Or you can even call in and just leave your contact information, because I'd really like to I'd really love to. I just feel it's really missing. You know, I just feel like there's just, it just adds so much. And sometimes, you know, there's the raging grannies who added a lot to a lot of the fossil fuel protests and had their own songs and some of their parodies, and it added some, and they had song sheets. So there has been some of that. But in terms of like getting, you know, I always wanted to see, you know, even some of those like really hot protests that we had back in, say, 2020, or, you know, I've seen so many over the years where a lot of people get together and, you know, well, you know, it can go different ways. There's a lot of speeches and, you know, people get enthusiastic and then it ends, or it can turn into, you know, fight with the cops thing, which is, you know, has its place. But and sometimes, you know, they turn into marches, which are really good. But I always feel a lack of cohesion. There's this big group of people together and, you know, there's chants. Usually there's someone on a megaphone and then people repeat it. And you'll have like sometimes two or three if it's a really big march. And so you get sometimes a little confusion because, you know, there's the one that you're like in between two. And anyway, there's always, to me, a lack of real cohesion that if you actually got a culture where actually people had, you know, we're always all quote on the same page, which is actually goes back to like Bible reading, interestingly enough, being on the same page. We're all reading the same page and verse anyway. So you're all on the same song page, but then, you know, memorize the songs and people, you know, cause I lived for a time in Italy, and there is a strong tradition. You know, there's separate traditions, actually. You know, there's socialists, communists, and anarchists have their own traditions. But, you know, then they're all united, several songs. Bella Ciao, of course, is the big one. Everybody knows that. And sometimes you'll have, you know, tens of thousands of people singing that together. And there's really just a dramatic power in the feeling of that many people singing together. Even, you know, even a few dozen people or a few hundred people. So yeah, I'd just love to see that culture really come in, and I'm sure you felt that yourself quite a bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think this was, I got to talking to some people at the Women's March of 2017. We tried to start some songs going in the DSA contingent in the march. We just couldn't do it, couldn't remember the words, needed a song leader. And then somebody told me about that DSA was starting a choir, and I signed right up. I think that it's what is really needed in those moments is a very strong song leader, somebody with a very loud and confident voice who can teach people the music in a crowd. I think that the way I've seen this done the most successfully has been by a New York City institution called the Church of Stop Shopping, Reverend Billy and the Church of Stop Shopping. It's been around since the 90s, and they don't just sing their chorus in the street. They have an entire performance, and they encourage people to join in. And they do a lot of, I think, particularly like short songs or what's called zipper songs, where you change out one word in each verse, but the verse is always the same. A lot of call and response. But they're all, you know, fairly simple techniques that I think are very much needed in protests. Very difficult to do nowadays when a lot of people come into a protest. It's not just a few thousand. Sometimes it's tens of thousands, and sometimes with a lot of these ceasefire protests right now, sometimes it's hundreds of thousands. The larger the crowd, the harder singing is, the more chaos there is. But I think we still absolutely need song in all of these instances. I think in the protests in Chile a few years back, there were the streets of Santiago were absolutely filled with song. Thousands of people singing, you know, songs like El Derecho de Vivir en Paz and El Pueblo Unido. And, you know, everybody knows those songs because they're a part of the culture. They're a part of left-wing political culture in Chile. And I think a big part of why it's so hard to sing at protests in the United States is that we don't actually have a collective singing culture. Mm-hmm. And these are all songs that we have to learn, and then we have to teach them, which is why I think of singing solidarity not as much as a protest choir, so much as a historical memory project where we are retaining and teaching a lot of these songs to new generations of people so that they're remembered and can be brought forward into the future and disseminated in current day protest movements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember vividly having a full studio two here at KBOO, fairly small room with the Church of Stop Shopping. Must have been, I don't know, four or five or six of them. And they actually sang a couple songs. It was really wonderful. They toured through here and did a couple protests. And I know that they, you know, sometimes they'll go into a bank, which, you know, sometimes has really good acoustics anyway, and they'll push it to the point of either almost getting arrested and ducking out just in time, or I think they've even actually been arrested, probably more than a few regularly. Yeah. So that's part of a whole civil disobedience tradition. So do you feel like what your efforts and the efforts of your group and others has shown to have some influence? Has it sort of started to insinuate itself into the progressive culture there in New York City? Do you see more singing because of it?
I mean, I don't know if there is a labor choir in Pittsburgh that came to us for some advice on how to start a choir. I've had many conversations with people over the years on organizational practice. I think it can be quite difficult to do this kind of organizing within cultural organizing because you need people who have not just a nice singing voice, but actual musical ability, can note read, can create arrangements, can teach music, can, you know, at least play a guitar. And so getting somebody to do that for free over a sustained period of time can be quite difficult. And so the organizing project of a choir is significant. It's a significant amount of work, and we put a lot of love, a lot of labor into the choir. And I think we're very lucky too to be in New York City, where there's so many people working in the arts who are also in DSA and left wing movements. But I think creating that left wing culture, certainly within the choir, and our like surrounding communities, I think we have had some influence. We have in bringing music to movements, particularly locally.
Mm-hmm. I did want to mention, I had talked about Anne Weiss, the local singer songwriter, does have a website called it's Anne A-N-N-E Weiss Weiss.com, and I'm looking at it right now. There is it's called the Everyone Welcome Community Choir Singing Class. There's an upcoming, it's about a 6-week class on Tuesdays. It's through Artichoke Music, another great local institution that encourages and facilitates people getting together and playing music, making music and singing. And so you can, go to that, Anne Weiss, there's actually just go to her website, anneweiss.com, and find out all about that under the classes. So that's one place you can go to plug in. There are the Peace Choir, Portland Peace Choir, and the Gay Chorus, I believe it's called. I didn't do my research fully. I know that the late great KBOO programmer Per Fagering was part of a singing group. I don't know if they're still around. If anyone's listening to this, who has been part of that, please call in 503-231-8187. And just a quick plug once again, we are somewhat short of our $75,000 goal for our end of year campaign, and we still do have a one-to-one matching grant here. So your every dollar you give is matched on a one-to-one basis. So if you give 10, you really give 20. If you give 20, you really give 40, and et cetera, et cetera. If you give 50, you give 100. I could go on, but I won't. So go to kboo.fm and click on donate. You can do that while you're listening to this program so we can see in real time how well we are doing. And you can also text KBOO to 44321. We really, really, really need and we really appreciate your support, and we really value all our listeners. And I don't know if especially, but you know, we definitely really appreciate our member listeners who have the wherewithal and the desire and the interest to support community radio like KBOO. I just want to see who all has donated recently. And you're also welcome to call in at 503-231-8187. I did want to thank Jack and Nicholas, Jeannie, and Anonymous, and Janet for contributing in the past few hours. And you can join them by, again, going to kboo.fm. And once again, this is KBOO Community Radio. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland, with you every Wednesday. And I have on the line from New York City, Annie Levin, who is part of the Singin' Solidarity Choir, grew out of the Democratic Socialists of America. Now you have, is it all DSA members or can other people join in?
Yeah, anybody can join. I think that to be on our organizing committee and to vote in our elections, because we're actually a working group of DSA, and so we're structured like a political organization, so very democratic, very horizontal. To vote, you need to be a member of DSA, but absolutely anybody can come and sing with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excuse me. I mentioned these articles earlier. The one that I mentioned that was in The Guardian about the Commoners Choir by Alan Clifford, a moment that changed me, joining a radical choir. I don't know if you had gotten a chance to see that. Oh my gosh, it's one of those where I didn't think The Guardian had a paywall. No, you just have to click on I'll do it later and you get there. And someone asked him to join and he said he didn't feel particularly inspired, more cornered. I had just turned 50 and my punk political activism youth was far behind me. Instead, I'd settled down to a life of grousing and daydreaming. The exhausting graft of life as a teacher and parenting stroppy teenagers seemed to be the expected measure of my days. But this brief conversation, which was with someone from the Commoners Choir, saying, you should come along. They're looking for more people, and I'm sure you'd love it. Anyway, this brief conversation with Helen lodged in the back of my mind amid the evening sea of beer, cheese, and chat. I decided to try it. I got increasingly anxious as I contacted Boff and arranged to turn up. That's the Chumbawamba member, Boff. Turn up for one of the weekly practices. The thought of singing in public with a bunch of people that I didn't know filled me with dread. When I walked into the small room at the local university, I was handed a badge and a song sheet and pointed towards the kettle and tea bags. I immediately felt welcomed and became at once, without hesitation or question from anyone, a commoner. And then they stood in a semicircle and went through the six or seven songs written by Bach. Anyway, that's a wonderful account of how someone can find their way. It's not a very deep rabbit hole either. I guess you have to know the right people, but yeah, I mean, there's these things all over the place. Tell us about some more ones in the United States that you've been in touch with or have heard about.
Actually, I don't know if we have in New York City, in addition to the Church of Stop Shopping, which is not a community choir exactly, although it is a community. There's the New York City Labor Chorus, and there's the DC Labor Chorus. I think that it's the tradition of the labor choir is more in the UK and in continental Europe than in the United States. We have been in touch with a number of choruses in the UK, I think particularly in Northern England, the campaign choirs. Momentum, the Labour Party adjacent left-wing organization. Some members of Momentum started a choir a few years back, and you were in touch with them when they were getting started and trying to, you know, help them with their organization. There are a number of, I think, particularly in Europe, where there are actual communist parties, socialist parties active, there are many more left-wing choirs like Sing in Solidarity. And I cannot remember the names of these choirs just now, but they it's very much a living tradition, but not so much in the United States. I think that, and I think where it does exist in the United States, people tend to swing a little bit older. I think because Sing in Solidarity is the DSA choir, which is now, since Bernie's 2016 and 2020 campaigns, very much a more youth-centered organization. So I think while we're not by far the only socialist choir in the United States, we might be the only one where the majority of members are under 40.
Uh-huh. Well, that's encouraging anyway. And I know the Portland Radical Choir had relatively few members, but they were all very young.
Wonderful.
I wonder what they're doing now. I wish one of them was listening and would call in. But anyway, I'm talking again with Annie Levin. We're talking about the power of singing together for, you know, both personal and social transformation, about many examples around the world. You know, one thing that really stuck in my mind, I know that, you know, after the fall of the Soviet Union, which was a very, very mixed very, very mixed results. There was the freeing of a lot of suppressed nationalities, but there was also a huge shift of wealth from the state to hyper-capitalists, as in Putin's Russia and other places, and a disintegration of the social support networks that really did exist under the communist regime, odious though it was. And I remember that there was amongst a lot of the nationalist movements that sprung up at that time. I particularly remember in Lithuania, there's a huge tradition of vast mass singing together as part of that. Did you ever hear about that?
In Lithuania?
Yeah. I think it was Lithuania.
I know in places like Ukraine, Bulgaria, there is a very deep and ancient choral singing culture that certainly came out in during the socialist, during the Soviet period. About Lithuania, I'm not really sure.
No worries.
It's a shame, because half of my family is Lithuanian, but don't know a whole lot about their choral singing.
Well, look that up, because I believe that was part of one of those countries, one of those Baltic states. Had a deep tradition. Anyway, Lithuania is a very interesting country because it was some of the last pagan culture in Northern Europe. But anyway, I digress. Became Christianized very, very late. So it looks like we do have potentially a listener calling in. Maybe we'll find out about that. And I see Andrew Geller in the air room, and I know he's got a really good show coming up. He's going to be talking about what happened in Colorado with the Colorado Supreme Court taking Trump off the ballot. And he's going to have a constitutional law expert, I believe, some kind of, which should be really interesting. But yeah, we do have Santiago. Go ahead, you're on the air. Well, we did have Santiago, but we have a very few minutes left, but we do have time to squeeze someone in at 503-231-8187. Yeah, I don't know. I guess people have just been fascinated by this conversation. We generally have quite a few callers, which is fine. We've gotten a chance to hear a lot more about what you've done. And yeah, that choir in Leeds is called the Commoners Choir, started by the ex-Chumbawamba member. His first name, I can't remember, but Boff is his last name. Yeah, and that's from an article which I linked to on my program page, Wednesday Talk Radio, on our website, kbo.fm, where, again, you can go to contribute to our end-of-the-year membership drive. So, yeah, you got this album coming. Had you had previous albums already before that one?
No, this is going to be our first album appearance, and we're all very excited to have this coming out.
So you're gonna do a tour backing your album release?
Hey, if somebody wants to take us out on tour, we will absolutely go.
Well, I'm putting it out there. Anyone listening wants to help organize a leg, then they would have to contact people in, you know, Seattle, you know, in the Bay Area, and wherever else to be able to put together enough dates that you'd be able to actually, you know, finance the tour. And of course, you'd be selling your CD. I think that'd be a wonderful thing. Then you'd like really help inspire, get a radical choir going here. And I still haven't heard from anyone out there who's been part of one or is part of one now and would put me to shame for going on and on and on about what's going on in Portland, not mentioning their efforts, but we can only do what we can do. And you also have a Facebook page for the Sing in Solidarity Choir. I forgot to mention that. And of course, there's your website, annielevin.com. So lots of things. Where do you see this developing? Do you see what sort of new things would you like to see come out of what you're doing? Do you have any new projects in the works? Anything?
Yeah, concert coming up in a couple of weeks at the People's Forum in Manhattan of Appalachian labor music and left wing songs from the American South. That's going to be on January 13th. And we had last year a choral cabaret, a socialist cabaret, that I think was probably the coolest thing that we've ever done. Trying to, I think, take a lot of songs from the Weimar era, a lot of Kurt Weill songs, lyrics by Bertolt Brecht, songs from the Three Penny Opera, and bringing them to an actual cabaret venue in Manhattan. People wore tuxedos. We did a cabaret, like Cabaret the musical, Christopher Isherwood style, with performances, with choral performances, and with costumes, with dramatic readings, with a little bit of like acting, some little short skits that we made. So really trying to tell an entire story through song instead of just having a choral concert be a choral concert, trying to do new things artistically with the performance and incorporating our politics into the arts world and incorporating the arts world into our politics.
Mm-hmm. Let me just ask my board operator, Danielle, to maybe cue up the Leon Rosselson, The Power of Song again, that we can go out with in just a couple minutes. And we only have a couple minutes. And once again, we're asking you to go to kbo.fm, click on donate, support us in our end of the year campaign. We do have a ways to go to reach our $75,000 goal. We really appreciate all of you who have supported us. And we appreciate even more those of you who will support us right now in the next days. You can also text KBO to 44321. You got any words of inspiration for anyone wanting to do some singing together in public?
Yeah, I think, you know, anyone can sing. I think that singing together, what is the most beautiful thing for me about singing solidarity is the community that we built through sharing music. And bringing a lot of people together who would not normally be together, socialized together, and building a very warm and beautiful community that I think everybody who's a member of it really, really treasures here in New York City. Okay. And I think that's probably the most valuable thing that we contribute in addition to our music.
Nice. Well, thank you, Annie Levin. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks very much. Yeah, you take care.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, bye. And we're going to go out with a little bit more of Leon Rosselson with The Power of Song. Thank you, Danielle, for stepping in to board operate. Bye, everybody.
Pennsylvania, it's 1914, the miners strike for higher pay. Scouts brought in to break the strike, miners wise for their way. Now here comes the local sheriff.
sheriff and the company police, and the women are all jailed for disturbing the peace. Mother Jones, fiery agitator, tells the women, sing, sing all day, sing all night, and don't stop for anything. So the women sing their hearts out on and on defiantly, till the sheriff's going crazy and he sets the women free. Together into song. Remember a township called Soweto. It's 1976. Remember,
this is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
My name is Mike. I work at KBOO as the data coordinator. I'm a KBOO host. I do a little show called Pandemonium, and I am a KBOO listener. I love listening to KBOO because it doesn't sound like anything else. I wish I could take credit for that. I'd love to say the reason KBOO sounds so interesting and different is because we have the best DJs, the best reporters, the best volunteers. I believe we do. I think we have an amazing community, but I don't think that's why KBOO sounds the way that it does. KBOO sounds different because of the way we are funded. KBOO is funded by you, the listener. Everyone gets the same radio, and you contribute what you can when you decide to, and there's no advertiser interfering in the relationship between you and the programmers. They say that's not supposed to work. They've been telling KBOO that will never work for 55 years now, and you, the listener, keep proving them wrong. So please help make sure KBOO continues sounding different by keeping KBOO listener-sponsored, independent, and non-commercial. Make your tax-deductible year-end gift to KBOO at kboo.fm.